The first one was hard. Her heart was racing, and for a few days after, she was sure everyone knew, and her time would be up at any minute. But no one seemed to notice. And every time she did it after that, it got easier and easier. Until it was just another part of her day. She'd stop eventually, she told herself. But that part didn't become easier to do. Instead, it soon seemed impossible. The gaping black hole of her own making had swallowed her, and there was no way out. This is True Crime South Africa. I'm Nicole Engelbrecht, and you're listening to episode 196, The Crimes of Hildegard Steenkamp. This episode is sponsored by the brand new release movie Coyotes. I think we all need something a little less serious in our lives right now. Coyotes is technically in the horror genre, but it's also actually a comedy. Married couple Liv and Scott, along with their teenage daughter Chloe, are about to have the night of their lives, and not in a good way. As a wildfire rages in their suburb of the Hollywood Hills, nature has started to make alternate arrangements for the furry inhabitants of the fire-ravaged area. The coyotes are moving into town, and they, perhaps understandably, feel like the area would be much nicer for their pack if it were a little less populated. So they're taking out the humans, one by one, sometimes two by two. Liv and Scott, played by real-life couple Kate Bosworth and Justin Long, must now try to survive the nights and try to take back their neighborhood as they watch their neighbors, including Playboy, Trip, and his paid-for girlfriend for the night, get decimated by the coyotes. Directed by Colin Minahan and also starring Brittany Allen and Norbert Butts, Coyotes is jump-scare hilarity at its best and opens in cinemas across South Africa today, the 14th of November. Three lucky True Crime South Africa listeners have won three double tickets to watch Coyotes for free, and the winners are Dugan Honey, Regular Vegan Life, and Eileen van der Zwan. Congrats, everyone. If you weren't one of the lucky listeners, pause now and go book your tickets to start your weekend off with some snarling, flying fur, and several belly laughs. A huge thank you to Coyotes for supporting the podcast. If you'd like to support the podcast and grab some True Crime South Africa branded merch, listen up. TCSA has partnered up with the SA Criminologist platform, and if you head over to their website now, you can stock up on a wide range of true crime-themed merch, including tumblers, stickers, pens, mugs, and so much more. And if you use the code TCSA at checkout, you'll get a site-wide discount of 10%. Check out the full range of true crime-themed merch at sacriminologist.co.za and support TCSA while grabbing some truly cool goodies for you or your partner in crime. Shout out to this week's Patreon and PayPal superstars. A huge thank you goes out to Chris Marie Bietke and Carmen Howard for your support on Patreon. Thank you so much, everyone. Your support really does make a huge difference. This episode was first published in the True Crime South Africa Patreon feed in October 2024. Hildegard Antoinette Blichnoot was born on the 23rd of May 1974 at Andries Vosloo Hospital in Somerset East. Her mother, Dillian, was not married, and Hildegard's biological father was not involved in her life at the time. As a result, Hildegard ended up being raised for the first few years of her life by her grandparents. The couple were not particularly wealthy, but her grandfather worked hard on several farms in the Somerset East area, and they were very stable and loving toward their grandchild. So Hildegard flourished under their care. Hildegard's mother did not play a major role in her life during this period, and only occasionally visited, so she really viewed her grandparents as her main caregivers. After many years of living with her grandparents, though, Hildegard's mother suddenly reappeared in her life with big news. She'd gotten married and was there to take Hildegard home to live with her and her new husband. The young girl was not terribly excited about the prospect. Her mother was, for all intents and purposes, a stranger to her. But her grandparents had no choice. Their daughter was legally entitled to do as she pleased with her child. And so Hildegard was taken out of the only home she'd ever known and went to live with her mother and new stepfather. Her new home and family setup could not have been more different from what she'd experienced with her grandparents. Up until that point, she'd lived in a peaceful environment with little arguing or tension, but her mother's home was the exact opposite. Hildegard soon realized that her new stepfather was an alcoholic, and a violent one at that. He was physically and emotionally abusive to both Hildegard and her mother, and he also started isolating both from Hildegard's grandparents. Soon, the young girl was not allowed to speak with the people who'd raised her in her early years at all. Then one night, the bubbling tension in her new home exploded, and Hildegard's stepfather committed a horrific act of violence. In an attack on Hildegard, he forced the back of her head into a pan of hot oil on the stovetop. Her scalp was horrifically burned, and the welts extended down the back of her neck, too, which were quickly noticed at school. Teachers reported the abuse to Child Protection Services, and Hildegard was removed from her mother and stepfather's care. For a little while, she lived with another family member. But as is so often the case in these situations, once the Department of Welfare thought that her stepfather had his drinking under control, Hildegard was returned. Of course, the situation in the home quickly reverted back to what it had been, and Hildegard spent most of the rest of her childhood and teens simply trying to survive her stepfather's violence outbursts. It's not uncommon for individuals who've grown up in abusive homes to end up replicating that environment in their adult intimate relationships. Some believe it has to do with the chaos of that type of home feeling normal for abuse survivors, and when they meet someone who reflects many of the same behaviours that their abusive caregivers did, it's experienced as feeling like home and comfortable, rather than the red flags they should be. This could be one of the reasons that Hildegard became involved with Tay Steenkamp after she met him in a Gauteng nightclub as a young woman. Some of his family members would later deny any claims that he was abusive, but there were those who acknowledged they'd witnessed the abuse. Tay Steenkamp was a police officer when he met Hildegard. The couple soon conceived a child together and got married on the 2nd of September 1994. But Hildegard miscarried soon after, allegedly after a physical assault from Tace. One thing that everyone who knew Tace would agree on was that he did have a substance use disorder related to painkillers and sleeping tablets. In addition to this, everyone knew that there had been infidelity on Tace's end too. It seemed to start in earnest when he left the SAPS and began working in private security. This work meant that he spent a lot of time travelling, and Hildegard would later discover that her husband had had several relationships with other women during this time. These revelations, of course, caused serious disruptions in the marriage, but Hildegard stuck around and the couple would have two sons together. In June 2004, the couple's lives changed significantly when Hildegard began working for a company called Medtronic. The international business is a supplier of medical equipment with offices in 350 locations across the world, including South Africa. Hildegard was hired to work in the accounts department, and she was paid a market-related salary. But friends and family would notice that not long after Hildegard started working at the company, her and Tase's lifestyle suddenly took a major upturn. Both Hildegard and Tase framed their sudden increase in finances as a result of a few different factors, including their successful side hustles, an inheritance from Hildegard's deceased father, and big wins at gambling. Gambling was a frequent pastime for the Steenkamps, but it would be later revealed that none of their side businesses were very successful at all. In fact, Hildegard would go on to claim that it had been Tase's failing business that had been the reason she began to do what she did. She says that about 6 months after she started working at Medtronic, she was explaining to her husband one night over dinner how she'd noticed these loopholes at work. Hildegard was responsible for loading creditors' banking details and setting up payments. It was also a part of her duties to ensure that VAT payments were made via an intermediary to SARS. As is the case with most companies, and especially a large international business like Medtronic, you'll ordinarily have one person loading the payments and then at least one, but often two other employees approving the payments. This is done securely by use of a token that ensures the person approving the payments is the person who is authorized to do so. The loopholes that Hildegard had identified were firstly related to those tokens. When employees with tokens resigned, the tokens had to be handed in when they left, but they weren't always deactivated. And so those tokens became a way to avoid having anyone else look at payments she was loading. In addition, Hildegard was responsible for making submissions to SARS for VAT returns. She would get this information from the middleman company and then put together the VAT return. And the loopholes Hildegard had identified lay in these aforementioned aspects. She'd figured out that when the authorization tokens weren't necessarily deactivated after the authorized user resigned, they would just sit in a drawer. A drawer she had access to. And since she was the one submitting the VAT returns to SARS, she also saw a loophole there. Every now and then, she could change the amounts that the middleman company calculated they needed to submit on their VAT returns. And if she did so to the extent that a refund would be due from SARS, she could siphon that money into a different account. Now, this last part is something I haven't figured out completely. And despite reading reams of judgments, it's never actually explained anywhere as to how Hildegard managed to change the banking details for the refund accounts that SARS would pay into. That's usually not a particularly easy thing to do when it's done through SARS. All that's mentioned in one judgment is that she managed to, quote, even find a loophole in SARS's system, end quote. So I can only think that perhaps the information isn't made public to avoid anyone else using the same loophole. But use the loophole Hildegard did. Initially, it was just the tokens she used to steal money. She would later claim that the first few amounts she'd taken were done with a specific purpose in mind. She claimed that her husband Tase's business was doing badly and he needed 100,000 rand to pay creditors to avoid legal action against him. On the 21st of December 2004, Hildegard made the first transfer from Medtronic into her own bank account. She'd set herself up as a beneficiary and then used the unused tokens to approve what would be a relatively small payment by Medtronic's terms, and eventually by Hildegard's terms too. 24,095 rand. When she returned to work in January, there was no sign that anyone had picked up her theft. And so, emboldened, she continued. She would later claim that after the fourth installment of money she'd stolen from her employer, she'd told Tace that she wanted to stop, but he wouldn't let her, and had physically assaulted her and threatened to kill their children. Hildegard said that around this time, she'd attempted to take her life by taking an overdose of tablets. No proof of this attempt would be presented at any point, as far as I can tell, but Hildegard would insist that she was not willingly taking the money from Medtronic, and she was only doing so because Tace was forcing her to. To the outside world around this time, though, the appearance of the couple's life was very different. They were absolutely living the high life. Within a year, Hildegard was stealing millions of rands per month from her employer. They moved into a lavish home in Cinderella in Boksburg and hired two butlers to tend to their needs. Soon the couple were taking expensive trips overseas, sometimes alone, sometimes with their sons and friends and family members too. When they travelled locally, it was all five stars, nothing less. Hildegard also shared her love of gambling with her friends and family, inviting them to Emperor's Palace and handing out stacks of cash so that they could spend the night gambling. She and Tace flew friends and family by helicopter to Sun City for the weekend and regularly booked VIP buses to the concerts of international performers. By December 2007, Hildegard was stealing 1.2 million rand per month. This soon escalated to 3 million rand per month. The Steenkamps were not just spoiling themselves and their family and friends, they'd also ingratiated themselves into celebrity circles, claiming to be successful business owners. They did have businesses, to be fair, but none of them were successful, likely because none could bring in the type of money they were getting from the fraud, regardless of how successful they were. So the Steenkamps would lose interest in their businesses, or they would make poor business decisions, and the ventures would fail. But none of this was the story that people around them was getting. Instead, the couple would always claim they'd simply decided to close their business and open a different one. It's quite interesting to me how money buys you access into certain circles. Ones you would never have been part of if your bank balance didn't look the way it did, and you didn't wear the right clothes and drive the right car. The Steenkamps were an ex-police officer and an accountant, with a bunch of failed businesses. And yet, in my research, I found Flickr accounts with photographs from celebrity-studded events where Hildegard and Tace rubbed shoulders with the cream of South Africa's television and music stars. Of course, these individuals who were smiling so broadly with their arms draped over the Steenkamp's shoulders could have no idea that they were posing with thieves and fraudsters. But it just goes to show that so very often, as long as you have lots of money, no one really questions where it comes from, do they? They just automatically assume you belong. It was a similar story with Thabo Bester, who rubbed shoulders, albeit virtually, with South African celebrities and successful business people from his maximum security prison cell. No one knew who he was, but he seemed to have the type of money that apparently makes that question a moot point. Interesting human behaviour. Hildegard continued to escalate her theft over the years. By 2015, she was stealing about 4 million rand a month from Medtronic. And I'm sure you're wondering how this was not picked up by the company over such a long period, especially with a large multinational company like this that definitely had regular audits. Well, no one else seemed to know that answer either. Again, in all the documents I've read, I've never really found a clear explanation as to why Hildegard's superiors or the company's auditors didn't pick up anything strange, especially considering this happened over 12 years. I did see that there were workshops and seminars for those in the audit and finance industry after this case was concluded, so there obviously were many things learned after the fact. But again, probably the same way they didn't want the SARS loophole information being advertised too much, those in the industry wouldn't really want too many people to know exactly how Hildegard managed to get away with this for so long and to such a huge extent. The Steenkamp's spending continued to escalate with numerous trips overseas, expensive food, hotels, clothing, and cars. By the same token, Hildegard's theft continued to escalate. And in 2016, a lot of the elements of the situation would come to a head. In April, May, and June of 2016, Hildegard stole the most amount of money from Medtronic that she ever had. 40 million rand over those 3 months. In amongst this huge influx of funds into the Steenkamp's home, their marriage was on the brink of collapse. Throughout this time, Hildegard would claim that she was being abused by her husband in multiple ways, although his family would later contest this, which I'll discuss a little later. Thijs had started a security company of his own around this time, and one of his employees, Dion Petersen, had started working very closely with both Thijs and Hildegard, and also apparently acting as Hildegard's bodyguard. There had allegedly been several more incidents of infidelity on Thijs's part, and Hildegard was apparently threatening to divorce him. On the 29th of July 2016, the Steenkamp home was filled with tension. Hildegard and Thijs had been arguing for most of the day, and it came to a head when Hildegard packed a bag and started to leave the house, accompanied by Dion Petersen. The pair would later say that they had barely closed the front door behind them when they heard a gunshot go off. Dion ran back inside, followed closely by Hildegard, where they found Thijs Steenkamp with a bullet wound to the face. Thijs had attempted to take his own life. He survived the attempt but was blind in one eye and would spend months in rehabilitation. In December that year, the family travelled to Sun City for a bit of a holiday to release some of the stress of the difficult year. Hildegard had hired a nurse to care for Thijs as he was still recovering from his head injury. But on the night of the 15th of December 2016, the nurse was not with him when his dinner was delivered to his room. That night, it is believed that Thijs had choked on a piece of steak. He was found by the nurse later that night, deceased in his hotel room. The autopsy would later show that he'd had a heart attack. The cause of death on his death certificate was listed as natural causes. A week after her husband's death, Hildegard returned to work to finalise a few last-minute things for month end. She also transferred 6.7 million rand into her own bank account. This would be the last payment she ever made from Medtronic's account into hers. A few days later, she and Dion Petersen returned to the hotel where Taser died, and booked in for a holiday. The Sun City Resort seemed to be a particular favourite of Hildegard's, as she could also gamble for long hours. It seemed clear to many already around this time that Hildegard and Dion were in a relationship, although she said he was still just her bodyguard. In January 2017, Hildegard resigned from her position at Medtronic. Soon after, Dion Peterser moved into the Cinderella home Hildegard had shared with her late husband, Tace. Now, I guess we may as well address this seemingly consequential series of events right now, because I've already mentioned how Hildegard would later claim she was forced to steal from her employer by her abusive husband, and every time she tried to stop, he would beat her up and threaten her. This seems to track when we look at how Hildegard seemed to have resigned quickly after Tace passed away. But she did make that enormous transfer of 6.7 million rand after Tace's death, and before she resigned, when it would seem there was no one forcing her hand. Of course, it also looks very much like Hildegard and Dion were having an affair, considering they got together so soon after Tace's death. And that probably is true to some extent. But it may not really mean anything in the bigger picture, because Hildegard had acknowledged that she'd wanted to leave her husband already when he made the attempt on his life earlier that year. So it's not unthinkable that she'd become romantically involved with someone else. For all intents and purposes, it looked as though Hildegard had now decided to move on with her life, now that Tace was dead, resign from the employer she'd been stealing from after one last big haul, and start afresh with her new partner. But there was something else happening in the background that could also have spurred Hildegard's decision to resign. In December 2016, in amongst Hildegard's tragic loss and the upheaval in her life, an employee at Medtronic had made a discovery. This individual had realized that Hildegard had held on to banking authorization tokens from ex-employees. Now, it would never be confirmed that Hildegard had actually been made aware of this discovery at the time, but I'm pretty sure she would have had some wind of it. It's likely that the person who discovered the existence of the tokens may have initially thought it to be a simple mistake and mentioned it in passing to Hildegard before reporting it to someone more senior. So maybe Hildegard resigning at that time had less to do with her finally being free to make her own decisions and more to do with her, coincidentally, around the same time as Tace died, having been discovered and realizing she needed to create distance between her and her employer. When the discovery was made and senior management were informed, an internal investigation started, and 70 payments were initially identified as having been authorized with the illicit tokens. It would only be later, once a full forensic investigation was done, that the VAT fraud was uncovered. During 2017, two parallel storylines played out. Hildegard and Dion started planning their wedding, which took place in November that year, and Dion was clearly enjoying the fruits of living with the very well-off Hildegard. He was suddenly wearing Louis Vuitton shoes and riding expensive imported superbikes. The couple seemed happy and living a good life. Their wedding was a top-tier affair, with Hildegard's wedding dress sparkling with hundreds of crystals, which had been hand-sewn onto it. The crystals were from India, and a designer friend of Hildegard's had actually flown to the country to select and purchase the stones himself. The wedding was deemed a fairy tale, and Hildegard looked like a Disney princess. This, paired with the name of the suburb that her expensive house was in, brought her the moniker that would later be used by the press to describe her, Cinderella. Unlike the young lady of the original fairy tale, though, Hildegard had not earned her sparkling lifestyle through hard work and commitment. And at the same time that she was walking down the aisle with her specially selected Indian crystals, reflecting the light of what seemed a bright future, at the offices of Medtronic, forensic auditors had been called in, and the vast trail of Hildegard's fraud was being uncovered. 174 irregular VAT transactions were identified. In addition, 65 direct transfers were found from Medtronic's account to the savings account in Hildegard's name, the same account into which her monthly salary was paid. The other payments were made into Tace's accounts, which had been loaded as a beneficiary on the system by Hildegard. With all of this information in hand, Medtronic and their auditors approached the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigations, and just a month after her very lavish wedding to Dion Peterson, the Hawks descended upon her home in Boksburg. It was the 13th of December 2017, and just 2 days from the one-year anniversary of Tace Steenkamp's death. Had he been alive, he too would have been taken into custody that day. Instead, Hildegard was arrested, and Dion and one of Hildegard's sons were also initially taken into custody too. But the latter two were later released, and no charges were brought against them. With Hildegard behind bars, the Asset Forfeiture Unit began its work of taking stock and seizing assets belonging to Hildegard. This would eventually include 11 luxury vehicles, 7 properties, all furnished with high-end furniture and expensive art, and watches and jewellery valued at 12 million rand. Hildegard appeared in court for the first time on the one-year anniversary of Tace's death, and it was made known that she was suspected of the theft of at least 460 million rand. Yes, you heard that right. 460 million rand. Hildegard was granted bail of 250,000 rand, with strict conditions on her movement. She was allowed to continue living in the home in Boksburg, but since all of the assets had been seized, she was not allowed to sell, donate, or give away anything inside the house. As is often the case with trials, the arrest of an accused is not necessarily the end of an investigation, but rather either the beginning or the middle. Over the years that followed, Hildegard appeared in court several times, and the judge was told that the prosecution was not ready to proceed as the nature of Hildegard's crimes meant that the investigation was slow-going and very detailed. This, of course, would have gone much faster if Hildegard had admitted to what she'd done and agreed to work with the prosecution to reveal exactly how the extent of her fraud could be uncovered. But she did not do that. From the moment she was arrested, for many years, she claimed that she was not guilty. By the time the trial was ready to commence in 2023, the amount of fraud had increased to 537 million rand. And Hildegard faced 336 different charges. Perhaps after realizing how much evidence the state had against her, Hildegard agreed to plead guilty. But in her plea statement, she insisted that she had been the victim of abuse and coercive control by her deceased husband, and this had been the reason for her crimes. As a result, the judge proceeded to hear the evidence of both sides to get an understanding of the crimes and see whether Hildegard's guilty plea was in fact legally fair. One of the prosecution's most important witnesses was an employee of the auditing firm Deloitte, who had headed up the forensic investigation. Graham Davies painstakingly explained to the court how the fraud had been detected and how they believed Hildegard had carried out the crimes. He then also explained how he and his team had gone through the bank statements for both Hildegard and Chase, going all the way back to 2004. Davies explained how, despite the huge amounts of money Hildegard had stolen, she'd still managed to rack up enormous gambling debts, and a lot of the money she'd stolen had ended up funding those debts. The investigators were able to get records from Empress Palace, which of course is just one of the many casinos Hildegard frequented. The casino could only go back 5 years, but they were able to tell police that between 2011 and 2016, Hildegard had spent 67 million rand on gambling. She had, of course, been gambling there long before that, with her employer's stolen money, which meant that the amount was likely at least twice that, if not more. And, again, that's without the other casinos she regularly frequented. I think it's safe to say that at least a third of the money stolen was spent on gambling. I'm sure with that level of money invested, she'd made some back. But from the evidence, it was very clear that she had a severe gambling addiction. Hildegard would later admit that she was addicted to gambling. She claimed she developed the addiction as a way to deal with the abusive situation in her home. She did, however, say that it wasn't only her gambling at Empress Palace, and she and Tace had shared cards, so the large amount could be attributed to her late husband too. In addition to the gambling, Hildegard had spent more than 30 million rand on international trips, including 11 trips to Dubai. As the prosecution went on to detail all the spending that had taken place, it soon became clear that there would have been very little left after the properties and the cars had been purchased. In fact, the investigators confirmed that there was almost no cash recovered, and the assets seized amounted to only 30 million rand. The vast majority of the almost 600 million rand had been wasted on incredibly frivolous spending. Thanks to Medtronic being a very large company, the money stolen had not resulted in the company being financially damaged beyond repair. But the consequences of Hildegard's theft did result in huge losses. The investigation itself had cost them close to 36 million rand. In total, taking into account the lost interest from the stolen money, they'd suffered an actual loss of about 700 million rand. In addition, as soon as they figured out that Hildegard had been submitting incorrect VAT returns to SARS, they'd had to make this known to the tax body and set about figuring out how much they actually owed. The company used SARS's voluntary disclosure program, as the fraud was, of course, not intentional from the company's side, and they'd hoped that this would mean that they would only be liable for the actual difference between the submitted returns and what they should have been. But that's not how SARS saw it. In fact, even as at the time of this episode going out, Medtronic is still fighting in court to get SARS to accept that this was not their fault and they should not have to pay interest on multi-millions of rands dating back, in some cases, 13 years. And, of course, that in itself is costing them even more money in legal fees. I'm also pretty sure that lots of people got into very big trouble within the organization for this. I can't imagine that the international head office would have been very pleased to discover that almost half a billion rand was stolen under the noses of their executives and no one figured it out for more than a decade. So, although Medtronic was not shut down by this theft, It most certainly had an enormous impact on the company and its employees. On the 15th of August 2023, Hildegard took the stand to testify. She initially asked if her testimony could be delayed as she was sick and on antibiotics. She was urged to try and testify, and as soon as she was asked why she'd committed the crime she had, she broke down and told the court that her late husband had abused and threatened her to continue on with the theft. Hildegard said that she'd been too afraid to leave her marriage because Thijs was an ex-police officer who she believed had connections who could hurt her even if she cut off contact with him. She said that Thijs had controlled all the money and he chose how they spent it. This had already been proven to not entirely be true because some of the money had gone into Hildegard's account, and she'd also clearly had access to spending on things she wanted, like gambling and clothing. On the third day of Hildegard's testimony, her lawyer started the day by saying that something had come to his attention which he felt he had to share with the court, as well as the prosecution. He took a moment to speak with his client, and then he informed the court that he'd become aware that one of the properties that Hildegard owned, which had been technically seized by the asset forfeiture unit, pending her possible conviction, had actually been sold by Hildegard. The building, which was co-owned by Hildegard and her son, was a commercial property, and it was sold in 2022. When this revelation came to light, there was a long period of confusion within the courts as the prosecution tried to figure out how this could have happened. Hildegard was asked to account for the information while on the stand, but couldn't provide any meaningful explanation. So the matter was put aside, and the asset forfeiture unit was instructed to investigate how the deeds office had allowed the sale to go through when the deed had an endorsement on it, and also where the money from the sale had gone. The trial moved on, and I haven't seen any other mention made of this issue, but honestly, it's pretty wild that this woman was able to literally sell seized assets out from under the hawk's nose. Hildegard's defense did not have any expert witnesses to present. So as soon as her testimony was finished, both sides rested and it was up to the judge to make his decision. Due to the detailed nature of the evidence, it would take almost 2 months for the judgment to be handed down and sentencing procedures to begin. On the 16th of October 2023, the judge accepted all of Hildegard's guilty pleas and began to hear arguments in mitigation and aggravation of sentence. In mitigation, Hildegard's attorney said that if the court imposed the prescribed minimum sentences for the numerous charges against his clients, she would face a 300-year sentence, which in his opinion would be unfair and inhumane. He explained that Hildegard was very remorseful and reiterated her claim that she'd been forced to commit the crimes through abuse and coercion from her late husband. He also attempted to essentially victim blame by insinuating that some of the fault lay at Medtronic store for allowing the theft to go on for so long without them picking it up. He asked the judge to consider balancing out the sentence with only a small amount of prison time and the rest in community service. In aggravation, the prosecution insisted that as much as the defense would like to minimize the crimes, the truth was that Hildegard's fraud was one of the most significant of its kind in South African history. They also refuted the claim that Hildegard was remorseful at all, as she continued to steal from her employer for such a long period, had made one of the biggest transfers after Thijs had died, and had waited 5 years to plead guilty. In addition, there was the matter of the property, which was illegally sold just a year before her sentencing. The prosecutor asked that Hildegard be given a minimum of 25 years effective prison time for her crimes. He pointed out that there seemed to be a vast difference between how violent criminals and financial criminals were sentenced, and he feared that lenient sentences for the latter were sending the wrong message. He called on the judge to consider rectifying this trend by making an example of this extreme case of fraud to let others know that financial crimes were not victimless crimes and they would not be tolerated. Finally, after 5 years of legal wrangling and 18 years almost to the date after Hildegard had made that first transfer of 24,000 rand into her bank account, she stood in court to receive her sentence on the 8th of December 2023. Several family members, including her husband, Dion Petersen, and one of her sons, sat in the Johannesburg Commercial Crimes Court to offer silent support. Magistrate Philip Fenter told Hildegard that her crimes equated to an unprecedented case of financial fraud, and she had betrayed the trust that her employer had in her. The magistrate noted that although Hildegard had tried to lay blame at her late husband's door, he found it difficult to believe that the man had held the amount of power over her that she claimed, when the evidence of her movements, spending, and financial freedom, as well as her actions after his death, showed otherwise. Fenter noted that he was seeing the profile of financial criminals such as Hildegard become more and more common. Quote, "It's the profile of the most trusted individual, in a position of trust, like an accountant or a bookkeeper. They usually never take leave, and someone who never allows anyone access to their system would go to the length of taking their laptops with them while they're on holiday so they can continue working. They're usually caught in the moment of forced absence from work. The accused is no different, except on a much larger scale. The perpetrators usually start with one or two small amounts, testing the waters. When they see they're not detected, they repeat this and gradually start increasing the amounts and the frequency." End quote. Then, Fenter handed down a sentence that was double what the state had requested, an effective 50 years imprisonment. Hildegard tearfully embraced her family before being led down to the prison transportation to begin the journey to serving her sentence. In early 2024, with the sentence finally handed down, the asset forfeiture unit began the process of taking into their ultimate possession and beginning to auction off the assets seized from Hildegard Steenkamp. There were only 6 properties left, with her having illegally sold off one, but all, including the Cinderella home, were placed on auction. In addition, there were the expensive vehicles, but also other items which spoke to the finer details of a lavish life lived on stolen money. Among them, 105 bottles of Johnny Walker Blue Label, each retailing at 3,000 rand, and a collection of jewellery, including pieces from Louis Vuitton and Versace. The sales and auctions marked the beginning of the end of a period of time that had been deeply hurtful to many people, especially those around Hildegard and Tace, who'd had no idea that the wonderful lifestyle they were party to had come from criminal roots. Tace's family spoke with the Afrikaans magazine Huisgenoot several times over the years and said that his suicide attempt had started a horrific cascade of revelations and tragedies from which they were not sure they would ever recover. His family denied that Tace was a violent man and said they were not aware of any abuse in Tace and Hildegard's relationship over the years. Tace's sister told the media that she'd been very close with Hildegard and the woman had cared for Tace's parents too, and they'd live in their Cinderella home until they'd passed away in 2021 and 2022, respectively. They were at least spared the trial during which Hildegard would make the claims about their son having abused her and forcing her to steal from her employer. His sister says that the day her brother sustained the gunshot wound to the face, everything changed, and she was suddenly not given as much access to her brother as she had before. She'd been hopeful that she would be able to spend more time with him, as it seemed his rehabilitation was going well, but then she got the terrible news that he passed away. She says she and her family still have many questions about Tase's death, and she doesn't quite understand why he was left alone in the hotel room that night, when at all other times he'd had 24/7 care from nurses. In the early stages of Hildegard's arrest, before she'd begun to make accusations against Tase, his sister had worried about her sister-in-law and tried to help her. She claims that she'd contributed 50,000 rand to the 250,000 rand bail that Hildegard had to pay. But later, when she tried to get the money back so she could repay a loan she'd taken out to get the money together in the first place, Hildegard acted like she didn't know what she was talking about. Hildegard would technically only be eligible for parole in 2048 at the age of 74. However, the Correctional Matters Amendment Act does allow for eligible offenders to be considered for parole at the age of 65, as long as they've served 15 years of their sentence. And lucky for Hildegard, in 2039, she will turn 65, and she will have served exactly 15 years of her sentence. I guess before I wind down this episode, I have to address the elephant in the room. Tase Steenkamp's death. I will be honest, when I first read about this, I thought it was incredibly suspicious. Woman decides to leave her husband, perhaps emboldened by a new relationship with a man who acts as her bodyguard. And after a day of arguing, the husband ends up with a bullet in his face, but doesn't die. Tase's parents were living with him and Hildegard when this happened, and Tase's sister did later share an excerpt from her mother's diary, where she talks about how violent the home was on that day, and how both Hildegard and Tase were taking a lot of tablets. No one seems to publicly question whether Tase actually did shoot himself, so I can only assume that either someone witnessed this, or he confirmed he'd done it afterwards. The circumstances of Tase's eventual death, 6 months later though, bothers his family, and understandably so. It bugs me too. Probably because the timing is just so weird. But then we also don't know the exact timing of any of the other aspects, like when exactly Hildegard's colleague discovered the tokens. I want to say that perhaps the tokens were discovered when Hildegard had no choice but to take a couple of days off when Tase died. But that doesn't really make sense, because she was able to go into work just a week later and transfer 6 million rand. If Tase had been alive when Hildegard's thefts had been discovered, he would have been arrested too. And of course, that would have made it a lot more difficult for Hildegard, because it's highly likely they would have turned on one another and one would have tried to blame the other one. But Tase's death was deemed to have been from natural causes. So I guess it just has to be accepted as being a really strange coincidence. Dion Pieterse denied claims that he and Hildegard had been in a relationship prior to Tase's death. And I realise everyone's grief journey is different, so to say that it's strange that they would have developed a relationship so suddenly, 1 month after Tase died, is perhaps unfair. I don't know. Either way, I absolutely agree with the magistrate's statements that the face of the average South African financial criminal has changed. It's no longer lifelong swindlers who've gotten through their whole lives scamming and scheming and then finally pull off one big Ponzi scheme. More and more, it's the auntie in the corner office. The one who seems like the most trustworthy of employees. The one who never takes leave and always comes into the office, even when she's sick. It's the one we always least suspect. But in retrospect, we have to admit, it all makes sense. If you'd like to hear more victim-focused true crime content, please subscribe to True Crime South Africa on Spotify or the platform you're using to listen right now. If you're looking for something still related to real-life stories, but often with a more positive slant, you can check out my new podcast series, I Live Through This. You can follow both podcasts on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, thank you for your support, and I'll chat to you soon.